You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Mustoe, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Man City top Newcastle in front of a joyous Etihad. A big win for Spurs over Manchester United in Ange Postecoglou's first match in charge at home. Liverpool defeat Bournemouth 3-1 despite going down to 10 men. And Moises Caicedo's Chelsea debut is spoiled by West Ham at London Stadium. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. Okay, welcome my friend Robbie Earle. Nice to see you, buddy. Missed you in the studio this weekend, but I'm sure you watched all the games. I think we should start with the champions, Manchester City, in a game that I thought was going to be tricky for Man City, even though it was at home, against a Newcastle side that we saw at St. James's Park, like live in the stadium. We were really impressed with the way that they played. And given City's midweek adventure to Athens, Greece, where they won the UEFA Super Cup against Sevilla on penalties, Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva not being available, you know, a few reasons why Man City might not quite be at their best against a strong Newcastle side, yet they still showed the class with who they put out there. And I thought a really good performance and a 1-0 victory.
It's a really interesting point, Rob, you say, because, you know, this season, again, I said to Rebecca when we were during the first game at Burnley, when we asked who's going to win the title, and I said Pep Guardiola half-time rant with Haaland tells me everything I needed to know, that they're going to be the team again. And it's funny, Rob, because each, probably if I say the last four or five seasons, people don't tend to say why City are going to win the title. They tend to say why City aren't going to win it. So, yeah, the false nine. We've had the, you know, settling Erling Haaland, in. We've had, you know, losing players this season, the Mahrez and the Gundogans, those key players. We've had KDB going down with his hamstring now up for maybe 4 to 5 months. So all reasons why City are not going to win the title. And then what City do, Rob, is play a brand of football. And here's my sort of first takeaway. The genius of Pep and the way that City play isn't reliant on any one individual. And Kevin De Bruyne is one of their great individuals, but Manchester City could win a title without Kevin De Bruyne. Right, there's my first statement. Why would I say that? Are they better with De Bruyne? Of course, with his passing ability and his assists and his football intelligence. But there's been times when Kevin De Bruyne has been injured and out for periods. There's times he's not always played. They can find another way with their dominance of football, with their disabling of the opposition, to a point where it was an interesting one for Newcastle, because we saw them live, put five past Villa, look intensely on top of the game, yet City dismantled them, Rob. They had one shot on target in the whole 90 minutes. That's what City's football can do, and that's because the non-reliance on any one individual, again, I'll repeat it, they're going to be the team to beat.
I don't think they are. Well, they are going to be the team to beat, Rob, but I still maintain that if De Bruyne is out for 4 or 5 months, we'll see who comes in the remainder of the window. And I'm going against the flow here, Rob. I'm going against the flow here. And you've been proven right the last few seasons, where I've been one of those guys that's thought about, okay, City can't keep doing this. This isn't normal. This is record-breaking. You know, to win four on the spin has never been done in English football, ever, ever, ever before. I think it's five teams that's won it three times on the spin, never four. So again, that means something to me. And I've been proven wrong with it. But I still believe, depending on who they bring in, they're missing some really important parts. That being said, of course,
when you say bring in, Rob, what do you mean? Do you mean bring in another player?
Well, I feel that they're going to try and bring in They're trying about Lucas Paquetá, they're talking about, that might have been put on hold right now with some investigations that are going on around the West Ham player.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've lost Gundogan. I know Kovacic has come in, and he's one player that I would definitely single out for this game. But if De Bruyne is out for four or five months, Rob, you haven't got Gundogan. You haven't got Riyad Mahrez anymore. It looks like Bernardo Silva, who's such a key player, is going to stay at the football club. So that's really, really good. Yeah. You've still got the big man up front. So I'm still, even though they were like awe-inspiring, really, I'm like, wow, the power of football, the power of the football, the power of possession, Rob, can dismantle, disable, like,
absolutely.
And they got the goal. I just feel like they might. I mean, listen, I know what I feel, but I've just seen something which disproves much of it, to be honest with you.
What you're thinking.
Yeah, because of how impressive it was. The only thing I would say, Rob, is there was a pretty special atmosphere in the Etihad in this game. They had the three trophies. Yeah. And by the way, how impressive does it look when the guys come out with the FA Cup, the Premier League trophy, and the big ears?
I mean, it just, like, wow.
I just thought seeing those three trophies come out, it's like, wow, that's a very clear image of how blimmin' good the team is, and I thought the atmosphere was great. I mean, Pep afterwards, Rob, was fired up, because he knew that it was a difficult game, and they'd been at a midweek game where nobody else did. I just thought it was very impressive.
And a day when the fans played the part, but you touched on a couple of points I wanted to know. Kovacic, Rob, is a real smart, clever addition for the football. Trust him on the ball, makes good decisions, good football IQ, can burst through in midfield and make things happen. Julian Alvarez, Rob, is a player we haven't really seen the best of yet, I don't think. Might get more minutes in the scene. Bernardo Silva, you said, is staying at the football club. So I'm giving you reasons why with the Kevin De Bruyne. But I want to go to my biggest reason and my underappreciated performer of the week. And some may or may not think he's underappreciated. No KDB, but we've got P.F. Phil Foden, my friend, who is arguably the best pocket player in the Premier League. No one exploits that space quite like Foden. Gets on the half turn, plays one touch, then drives forward, then makes something happen. His ability, Rob, now it's going to be a test of this young man. I think he's 23 years of age.
Yep.
I just looked up 5 Premier League titles, 4 League Cups, 2 FA Cups and 1 Champions League at 23.
Amazing.
If he was Portuguese, Dutch, German or Spanish, we'd be absolutely raving about him. For some reason, because he's English, I don't think he quite gets the credit he deserves, Rob. Now could be his stage to be from that player who's come in, players who had moments, players who played games but not always are guaranteed. This next 3-4 months could prove to him to become main starter in the team, because Phil Foden has the quality. I'm not sure if he's got the capability yet and the maturity of a De Bruyne, but he's got the quality to step into that role, Rob, and be a game winner for Manchester City. And if Foden and Haaland can connect in the way that De Bruyne and Haaland connected, Man City ain't going to lose a step. So my underappreciated performer of the week is Phil Foden, who I thought was outstanding, Rob, in the game. Newcastle couldn't deal with him, couldn't find a spot to hold him down. And he played Haaland in one or two times. He looked hungry, looked aggressive. He's quicker, Rob, than I thought. He's got a bit of pace. He's stronger than I thought when he goes body to body with people. And he's got a real hunger and desire to score goals. He's got 78 Premier League goals already. At 23 years of age, he's going to get 150 goals in his career, Rob. He's got a real hunger to get on there. So I just wanted to note my underappreciated player of the week. And one we'll keep an eye on over the next few months, because it's okay to have one game. De Bruyne's consistency is what sets him apart from many others. Phil Foden, my underappreciated performer of the week.
Well, you know I'm going to love it, because I get it as well, by the way. Because some people say, well, everybody knows about Phil Foden. Everybody knows he's a good player. But he's still underappreciated, mate. And how about being underappreciated by his gaffer? I don't see Pep. Pep doesn't. There's something about Phil Foden that Pep still has a doubt about, because he's not a regular starter like you'd expect him to be. You're not sure he's what?
I'm not sure if it's doubt. I'm wondering if it's management. I'm wondering if he's managing him in a way that he keeps
He's not ready to play.
Phil, you've got to keep showing me. You've got to keep showing me, Phil. You know, you're not just going to come in my team because you're 23 and from Manchester.
Mm. Yeah, listen, a couple of things. You probably saw on our television coverage, Rob, that, you know, when we're watching games, we get the ability to pick out stuff we want to talk about. And Phil Foden, from I think it was the second minute, did something. And I'm like making notes like, okay, Foden, potential. Because we talked about it, you know, De Bruyne, 11 assists, Premier League assists for Erling Haaland last year. He's out the side. Who's going to step up? Phil Foden maybe going to step up. So we picked that out. And then oh, there's another one. Guys, there's another one. Oh, there's a goal. There's an assist. Like, it quickly became a story, a theme of Phil Foden's ability to go from right side of midfield to drift inside to get on the ball. And he was a thorn in the side of Newcastle all the way through. And actually, we spoke to him, Rob. I asked him afterwards. We have this, on certain games now in the Premier League, we get a two-way where a player pops on the headphones and a microphone and we directly ask him questions. It's brilliant. We've done it for the last couple of seasons regularly.
Yeah.
And we had Phil Foden. And I said to him, the question was, okay, like, well done. Is that about your perfect position? Do you love rolling in from the right to a number 10 position in behind a striker? And he basically said that he's played number 10 before, central, and he's played wide, but he does enjoy being high and through the middle. Because there was a little bit of talk about him playing as a number 8, a little bit further back in midfield, which means he's got to do a little bit of other things in midfield. But I loved his position. I love the fact he's smart. I'm still baffled, Rob, why Eddie Howe didn't put a man on him or bring on Longstaff or somebody to stop him. I said at halftime in the game, Rob, what they got to do, Eddie Howe, stop Foden. Just stop him. Because he's going to create opportunities all the way through. So it's a good pick out. I think he is a little bit underappreciated for the talent that he's got. He's got brilliant generational talent. You know, all around Europe, a player that's got the softest touch on the ball. When you knock a ball into Phil Foden, he's lovely, soft touch. He caresses it, brings it in, and then he's got the ability to slide in those forward players. Alvarez and Haaland did it many times. So I like the shout. Love Phil Foden as a player. And, you know, for me, he would be in the team, Rob, in any spot there. Obviously, he's not going to play the number 9. They've got a number 9. But he's better than Jack Grealish. Yeah. He's Bernardo Silva's a tighter one. But I just love Foden being in the team because of his production. Things happen when he's in the game and getting on the ball. Brilliant, brilliant young talent.
Yeah, and now he you know, with De Bruyne missing and Gundogan gone and Mahrez gone to a certain degree, but it might be his spot, mate. It might be his time. And so it's an underappreciated form of the week. It's going to be interesting to see if he can keep that going now for the next few months until the likes of De Bruyne are back. We've talked here. I think you mentioned Akanji in the broadcast, Rob. Another one who I feel
$19 million
fits in absolute. I mean, it's a dream buy, isn't it? It's an absolute dream buy. Can drop into that midfield role, look comfortable. Can drop back. Is a good athlete. Both feet. I had him, Kovacic. I tell you, didn't have a good day, Rob. Erling Haaland didn't have a good day. Erling Haaland looked a little bit unhappy with himself. He was chuntering a bit and he was, you know, things didn't quite right. His touch was off once or twice.
He's got plenty of balls.
And listen, he's going to have those days. And he got played through a number of times, made his runs, and the build-up play was good. And that sort of is another reason why I go, see, he can still have off days and City can still win. Some teams who rely on that centre-forward, and if he doesn't score, they're not going to score goals, then you worry. But this City team can still find other ways. Well, Alvarez comes up with a moment, and he's had some important goals down the track already. So a really good day for City. I thought I was a little disappointed in Newcastle, mate. I've got to be honest.
Yeah.
Since the Newcastle we saw run all over Aston Villa, put 5 goals away and look sparkling on the front foot. And I know exactly why you said this will be a bit of a test for City early in the season. A Newcastle team that looked really ready. Didn't get their groove going, didn't get their rhythm, couldn't stop Foden. I thought sat a little deep. Didn't really press with that same level of energy that we've known, whether that was City's dominance of football or lack of confidence. But I thought it was a bit of an off day for Eddie and his team. And a little reminder of there's a gap at the top, mate. There is a gap, and Newcastle are trying to close that gap. But City are going to maintain a benchmark that's going to be high for everybody else to live with.
My thoughts on Newcastle United, Rob, with this game are pretty simple, really. We know what they're good at, right? We know with that energy, with that power, with that physicality, the running ability, they've got the fittest team. They're tremendous at that. I will say this. To get to the next level, they've got to be better with the ball. They've got to pass the ball and keep the ball better. At the top end of the game, the very top end of club football anywhere, you've got to be really good on the ball. And in moments against City, or in any great side, you've got to have the ball, Rob. And we've talked about how City's football, they couldn't press. They couldn't use their physicality because City are so good with it.
No.
When Newcastle United get the ball, keep it. You've got to keep the ball. To improve on what they are, you can get to a certain point. Or maybe you can. Maybe there's teams before, Rob. I'm thinking of a Mourinho, Chelsea, or some of these powerful teams that have won it before. But I don't know. I feel like Newcastle United have got to get better. Possess the ball, keep the ball. Tonali, keep the ball. Bruno's good at keeping the ball. Joe Ellington had a poor game, gave the ball away, some heavy touches.
Yeah.
You know, other players as well. So that's where I feel like, and anyhow, to be fair, Rob said it, that we've got to be better. We gave the ball away too much. And then you're chasing City for long periods of time, which is tiring. So they'll come again. And it's really early season, and we're not drawing any big conclusions right now. But Newcastle, it just was, for me, it was a bit obvious that, listen, good sides against Man City that have joy of footballing teams that make them run around a little bit because they don't really want to run without the ball. And Newcastle didn't do that because they gave them the ball back straight away. But no, it was a good game of football.
Great game. Yeah, really good game.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's turn to another good game at the weekend. Spurs hosting Manchester United. Big glamour fixture in the Premier League. Had some great history down the years between these two teams. Maybe didn't quite go as planned, or certainly as Erik ten Hag has planned. Ange Ball came out on top, Rob. Spurs came out 2-0 winners. In a contested first half, where maybe Manchester United feel maybe a little unlucky they didn't get the lead. As the game wore on, I have to say, I was A, more impressed with Spurs and what they were doing and how they were doing it, and their sort of evident joy in trying to play a bit more football, Rob. And I was, in contrast, a little startled by Manchester United, whose drive, whose determination, whose kind of hunger to get something from the game got worse as the game went on. And it was one of those, Rob, where I think it was 9 minutes at the end was added on for extra time. And I never once for the one night of the 9 minutes felt like United were really going to get back in the game.
Funny game.
Is a little bit damning of this group.
No, it is damning, and we'll get into details of that. I mean, it was a funny game, Rob, because I expected Tottenham. They didn't play as well as I thought they might in the first half. And to be fair to Manchester United, Rob, the first half an hour, they were the better side. They had great chances to score a goal. Bruno Fernandes' header was, I mean, I described it maybe harsh as a comedy header. I mean, he's 6 yards out, and it flipping bounces off his head and goes. It was a crazy moment in the game. But United, to be fair, you know, were at it a little bit, and they possessed the ball well, and City and Spurs couldn't get out, Rob. They played out for the goalkeeper to the centre-back, and they did all this stuff, and they couldn't find a way through. They kept gifting the ball back to Manchester United. Second half was very, very different. All of a sudden, Spurs find a way to connect passes. They score a really good goal with Pap Sarr, who is part of a new midfield, Rob. And just before I let you jump back in, just a little bit on that. I mean, talk about indicative of the new coach, the new manager. How about Højbjerg on the bench?
Yeah.
You know, skip out the side, Pap Sarr and Yves Bissouma. If there's one player that kind of like sums up the difference of the last two managers with this manager, Yves Bissouma now looks $1 million, a player that wants to get on the ball.
Yeah.
The last two managers didn't want Yves Bissouma because he's too fancy, he's too technical, he's too risky to have on the ball and to try to make those passes and flicks and stuff like that. Ange Postecoglou is like, I like that. You're good at we could do with that. So those two, I thought, were outstanding in the middle of the park. And maybe, Robert, a little point to what this Ange Boer looks like. Those two were outstanding.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. It's interesting, isn't it? In this era of £150 million, Caicedos and players at that level, Yves Bissouma, a player we saw back in the day and said he's talented and thought Tottenham was the step that he would go on to and be a platform. And as you say, for some reason, Jose and Antonio didn't fancy him, whether he wasn't safe enough, whether took too many risks maybe with the ball, wanting possession more instead of just, you know, moving things on and sitting in front of a back four. But yeah, looks a proper player. Looks like almost like a new signing. Pape Sarr's young man who's there, who'll probably be in and out of the team, you know, as the toil of the season goes on. But it's amazing, Rob, isn't it, how a new coach, a new thought, a new mindset can make people look so different, make players look so different.
Incredible.
And that's what Andrew's come up with. And the thing that I like about this guy, Rob, is it looks like he's got real courage in his conviction. Like, he knows what he wants and he knows how he's going to do it. And, you know, triumph or failure, he's going to do it his way. And I get, you just get the sense the players are enjoying it. And the fans, mate, are enjoying it. You get the sense that the fans are behind. They haven't just scraped away, you know, they beat Man United, but they played football to beat Man United. And that's what Tottenham's always been at. The Tottenhams we've played against have always had footballers and footballing teams because that's what they demanded at that football club. And they went away from that with Conte and with Mourinho to say, OK, let's just win. Let's just get up there and let's just win and we'll forget some of the football. But, yeah, what Postecoglou's got to show now is he can produce winning football as well as successful football as well.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a long season. It's a really nice start for him. But I think when you look back at it, Rob, I was excited for this experiment, really, with this coach. After what I'd read about him, some good friends of mine are Celtic fans, and like, you're going to, like 2 years ago, Rob, they were like, Premier League's going to come and get him. Our manager's going to come to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's happened now. With all that being said, Robin, given the expectation levels, I'm going to chuck in my underappreciated as Ange Postecoglou. And, yeah, listen, I'm jumping on it really early. I'm jumping on it really early.
Don't mind it,
And I know there's going to be, it's going to be this road. I mean, I think it's going to be ups and downs throughout the season. But right now, given what people thought and given what the expectations were and the spirit around the club with Harry Kane leaving, oh, my goodness, it's going to be a disaster now. And what are they going to do? And who's this guy? His Australian accent popped up in their press conferences. But it just shows you know, smart coaches, don't care what they sound like when they talk, don't care what they've been to in the past. He has been successful and he's won at every single job that he's taken. This is a jump up, but I just think, you know, no more. I think respect will come in, Rob, from everybody at Spurs, of course. I know others around the Premier League to think about this Tottenham team as being totally transformed and totally different. And with this transition, Rob, I'm going to chuck this one in as we go to Manchester United in a little bit more detail.
Wow, you're chucking in a lot on 2 weeks in the season,
I'm
my chucking, friend.
I'm excited. Just considering the amount of change at Tottenham, right? With the squad, with the coach, with players going, and the style difference, which is like two ends of the spectrum, what a good response he's getting. Okay, let's switch over. Manchester United, no real change. Same manager, another pre-season, $230 million spent on new players. There's nothing different about the style of play. That's what surprised me most about Erik ten Hag, Rob, that with little change, there's some change, there's goalkeeper and Mason Mount, but otherwise, it's the same group. How can they be so disconnected, unmotivated, when we all know that ten Hag's done a great job, he's added better players in certain spots, and yet they are so far down to what we saw last year, and we know that the team is capable of. Robbie Earl, tell the United States and all around the world why Erik ten Hag at the moment can't get a tune out of this squad.
It's a very good question. Listen, we've heard some reasoning behind pre-season, a lot of travelling, players not ready yet. It might be like last season, Rob, started season badly, might take them 2, 3, 4 games. We do know players, we've probably both had the situation, Rob, where sometimes the season it doesn't quite kick off and you need 2 or 3 weeks of Premier League level to get you back in your game, then you feel right. But you would say it's happening to too many players, and also this style of what they're trying to do, the system in which he's trying to play. I mean, we saw them, we were live at Old Trafford to see the game against Wolves that they were lucky to win. We've seen them now at Spurs away from home where, as the game wore on, they got worse and worse, to the point where, and our great friend Roy Keane, who we saw last time we were up in England, basically said Manchester United are the new Spurs, Rob. Which is pretty damning when we know that the great Sir Alex quote was, "This is Tottenham, guys. Like, go out and do what you got to do. This is only Tottenham." When we started saying this is only Man United, it's a bit of a worry, Rob. I'm going to ask you, or I'm going to pose a question in the Mason Mount type player that you buy, and this isn't Mason Mount is a very good player, but Mason Mount is a very good player when your team's playing well. I'm not sure Mason Mount is a very good player when your team's not particularly playing well. Now, that's something that I think needs addressing. Casemiro needs some help in there. Yeah. I don't know if Mason Mount next to him is the right type, because I don't think he's particularly putting Casemiro in a great light, and Bruno a little bit higher up the pitch. So that's one issue. My second issue, Rob, or my second question, is Marcus Rashford, who we've talked about at great lengths. How can Marcus Rashford be so talented on the left-hand side of the pitch? You put him down the middle of the pitch and he looks like he can't understand what to do, or he can't work out how to play as a centre-forward. This guy who's highly skilled, highly technical, a brilliant finisher when he's in form. How can just moving from the left to the centre take him so far off his game, Rob?
I don't know whether he wants to play there, Rob. He looked, we saw him, we saw his body language at Old Trafford against Wolves. He looked frustrated, miserable, as if he doesn't want to play there. I think when you're in a wider position...
But go on, sorry, go on, mate.
No, I'm just saying, when you're on the left-hand side, that you know, you're up and down, you're a bit more in midfield, maybe a little bit more involvement. When you're playing as a centre-forward, you've got two centre-backs that can get nice and tight to you. If you're not keeping the ball well, you're back to play all the time. I think everybody knows that his best position is wide left. And we are still, and I know they've bought Rasmus Højlund, and he's still come back from a back injury, and that is his new striker. But I think we all expected him to take a little bit of time to settle. He's still young, he's very, very raw. Manchester United still need a forward. Yeah. That's one issue. Back to your midfield issue. I think if Manchester United are passing the ball as they normally do, then Mason Mount becomes different, and you get Luke Shaw, Rob. Luke Shaw's the guy that pops into the middle of the park alongside Casemiro. Mm-hmm. There's your insurance for the counter-attack, and Mason Mount goes and does his thing, as does Bruno Fernandes. So I think that's the difference as well. Casemiro, again... I think he does need somebody with him. We did a breakdown on the tactics session, so check that out on NBC Sports YouTube channel, everybody, because we did a little tactics session. Me and Tim broke down that goal they conceded, Pap Sar's goal, Rob, in terms of midfield that didn't really engage Pap Sar going through to score. So I'll throw it back to you, Rob, with a comment that the press conference of Erik ten Hag afterwards is, I'd say, the most frustrated and rattled I've seen Erik ten Hag at his time at Manchester United, when he's asked and pushed about why the team is struggling a little bit. If you're a Man United fan, Rob, would you be worried that this should... That compared to the other teams that we've seen over two match days, Man United are way down on third. They were third place last year. Do you think United fans should be worried that, is this getting away from us? Or is this early season, he's a good manager, he'll find a way to fix these issues up front and in the middle of the midfield?
I think an optimistic Man United fan would say, the latter. That, we started badly last time. We can, turn this around. A win next week changes everything. All of a sudden, things can look rosier. What I would say, Rob, and it's something that's been attached to the club now for seems like forever, the sale of the football club, mate. The ownership of the football club. The conversations up there, mate, at some point have to be getting to a guy where we're in limbo. The football club's in limbo, doesn't know if it's coming, if it's going, who's in charge, who's he talking to, is it being sold, is it not? I mean, all the other clubs have a little bit of clarity to a certain degree. Liverpool had to get some clarity, but I think Jurgen Klopp's got that now in terms of where they are. Pep Guardiola, you know, has got some clarity in the way he works and what he does. Manchester United, with Erik ten Hag, haven't, mate. And football clubs are represented on the pitch with what's happening off the pitch. And Manchester United are not in the right place, not in a good place off the pitch. And I think that's why we're seeing some of what we're seeing out there at the moment. And the sooner this is resolved, the sooner there's somebody in charge who sets a new agenda, who gives some clarity, who talks about the future and can back that up, the better for Manchester United.
Yeah, well said, my friend. I think totally agree with that. I mean, that's the last thing on my notes as well, as like the wholesale thing is not great. But listen, I think they are going to bounce back. You know, he maybe can demand a bit more consistency from Antony's, from Garnacho's, from Rashford, from Sancho. That worries me a little bit. But no, it was an interesting game, and just, you know, we'll move on now, Rob. But Tottenham, wow, like it's so much different, so much change, fun to watch. And, you know, a couple more goals from them. So that was an interesting game, maybe the most interesting game. Anyway, let's move it on, my friend, to Anfield.
Yeah.
And Liverpool. Good victory against Bournemouth, 3-1. Yeah. Andoni Iraola, of course, a new manager for Bournemouth, sets the team a little bit differently now, Rob, where they're very quick out the blocks, high press. They won the ball a couple of times early. Trent has a heavy touch, gives a ball away, and they go up in the game with Semenyo. But after that, Rob, Liverpool kind of found their form, stopped making mistakes, and looked pretty slick in dispatching Bournemouth after that.
Yeah, I'd agree. My notes, you know, as I started, were part of what I see today gives me reason that Liverpool might go close to challenging. Part of what I see now and then needs a bit of a tidy up if they're going to do that. And I would say, going forward, Rob, and you know, you got Salah, you got Jota, you got Diaz, you got Gakpo, and you got Szoboszlai in a midfield breaking forward. That's a proper threat. That's top end threat. There's still a little bit of clumsiness, maybe I would say, at the back, not quite being on top of things. I've included the goalkeeper a little bit in that. Trent. My takeaway with Trent is, in some respect, I think his role needs a little bit more defining to get the best of him. There's times where playing into midfield, he's got to be more aware that's an area where people are going to shut you down and the game can turn over, Rob. You know, and they've got to be better set up when he does go in there, that they've got the defence right. But, the good side of Trent is he was involved in most of their good things. He was involved in most of the goals. And when things are ticking with this guy, Szoboszlai in midfield, Rob, I'm loving what I'm seeing from him in two games. Yeah. Absolutely loving what I'm seeing from him. So, yes, plenty of good things, Rob, but there's still a little bit at that back in those roles when Trent goes in that still hasn't quite been nailed down, and they've got to be tighter in games. You know, they started, Bournemouth could have scored like in the first 60 seconds before they scored and nicked the ball off them, and that press early on was causing them a bit of a problem until, I think Jurgen Klopp said, we woke up, and once they did wake up, then we sort of see the Liverpool who we expect to see.
Let me throw this at you, Rob. We know that Liverpool can find big money. They offered over £100 million for Moises Caicedo. Yeah. Obviously, he decided to go to Chelsea.
Yeah.
So they've got some money there. I'll be honest with you. I think Liverpool should go out and buy a legitimate, proper, traditional right-back. A right-back that absolutely is an excellent defender that gives Jurgen Klopp the option of playing Trent in some of the, in inverted commas, easier games as right back going into midfield. But in certain games, no. Trent, you know, we're going to play somebody else at right back. Now, whether you play in midfield or whether you sit on the bench, that's I'm fine with that. I still... I mean, all that being said, right, you know, there was no defensive drama in the second half. And for me, watching Liverpool
I know what
I know what they're going to do in midfield. I know what they're going to do up front. I mean, Endo, the new Japanese midfield player. We'll see. We'll see how effective he's going to be.
Decent 30 minutes, didn't he?
But defensively, I know Joe Gomez came on. Did he come on for Trent? I think Joe Gomez came on for Trent late.
Yeah, right back. It looked like Trent had a bit of a knock or something. Yeah.
I just think that would be a smart way of using money to give that. I'm not saying that Trent should be out of the team because he's a brilliant footballer. We know that. But in certain situations, you know, in certain games, I think Liverpool would benefit from that defensive extra power there. We've seen Man City, Rob, haven't we? We've seen Man City play with four centre-backs and be much tougher defensively and go and let the midfield and the attackers do their thing, knowing that they've got four brilliant defenders back there. Guardiola, I thought, looked good as well for Man City, Rob, just briefly going back to there. That's just the take that I think that they would benefit from. The money is there. They've got a holding midfield player. We will see. But I thought they looked strong. There was no defensive drama. Alexis McAllister, Rob, throwing it back to you with the red card, just a little bit of a clumsy
Well,
late...
what about the penalty? There was two incidents,
yeah, well, go on,
Rob,
then.
Weren't there?
You go first.
The penalty. So I thought... The penalty...
Szoboszlai, when it
probably was a penalty.
Caught.
Yeah, Szoboszlai got caught, didn't he, just inside the box. Mm. And it's one of them where it's a bit of contact, and there was a bit of contact, and he goes down, he's inside the box. I thought they kind of got the benefit of the doubt on that one, and you know, you see why it's given. It's one of them, if it wasn't given, would he looked at it and change his mind? Mm. Probably not, but I think having given it, and you saw on the VAR that it was right... I think on the other one, Ron, my first feeling was it was a bit harsh because it looked like it was a mistimed challenge. It wasn't like a malicious straight foot or trying to clear the ball out and clear the fella. But, Rob, all that said, in the current climate, if you're that late and you're that high, you're probably going to see a red card. And so because of that, I didn't have an argument with that either.
Yeah. No, that's right. I thought the penalty was a bit soft. I mean, you know, we had a meeting again with the PGMOL, the head of referees, before the season starts. Yeah. We have a really nice conference call with the referees, with the Premier League, putting us up to date on different refereeing kind of interpretations. And it was brought up again that, you know, we want penalties to be significant contact in the box. You know, contact doesn't necessarily mean a foul. I just thought that was one of them a little bit. And you know, like you said, if it was given or not given, it's never going to get overturned because it wasn't a clear and obvious error. I thought it was a little bit soft. And same thing with McAllister, a little high, studs are up on the shin. Not a ton of excessive force where he's really going through the player. But I think you said in the current climate, understandable. So good. Good signs, Liverpool. Very good signs for them. Keep going, you know, keep it strong defensively. Just quick line on Bournemouth, Rob, with a new manager. Different. Again, they're trying to do it a little bit differently. This was not a good day for them. Got outplayed, I think, in most areas. But what do you think quickly on
I think they'll be all right. I think they'll be competitive, mate. I think the few people
missing
had them
players.
Down to be, you know, part of the relegation. And Tyler Adams, isn't he? Looks like that business is done and will make them better, mate. That's a good little tidy pickup for Bournemouth, I think. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing them a little bit more, you know, if Areola comes with a decent reputation overseas. Let's see if we can bring that to the Premier League. But, good day for Liverpool. Good 3 points, gets them up and running. And ahead of a difficult trip next weekend, Rob, they go to St James's Park on the Sunday. So that's going to be a bit more of a test for Liverpool against the Newcastle team who want to get back on the road.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Q hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Absolutely right. Okay, let's jump to the next game that was a fun game. We just watched it on the Sunday. It was West Ham United, Rob, playing host at London Stadium against Chelsea. And West Ham won 3-1 against Chelsea, Rob, in a game that had a little bit of everything, really. A lot of talk about Mauricio Pochettino. And I'll just start with this, Rob, that when we went to Stamford Bridge and we saw them play against Liverpool and got a good performance and looked good.
Yeah.
It was, for me, it was, oh, wow, that was surprisingly good. Didn't expect them to be as good as that right now. Well, this Chelsea was kind of what I expected last weekend. A lot of mistakes, Rob. New, young players, a little bit naive. Mistakes, set-piece mistakes, different people in different spots. Dizazi, the new defender, looks shaky to me, Rob. You miss a penalty. God, blimey, the most expensive player in British football comes on and gives a penalty away. I mean, it was everything that I thought we might see from Chelsea, to be fair. Of course, there's flashes in there that look good, and they got talented players. And Caicedo and Enzo are going to be really good together. But there's a lot of work to do, a long way to go, and they've got to cut out the mistakes of not marking at corner kicks or a defender that gives a ball away and then allows Mikel Antonio enough space to get a shot away where he scores. So some painful lessons, Rob, I thought, for some of those players at Chelsea.
Yeah, I've kind of had a similar note. There were some bright spots. I thought sometimes their football is quite sleek. They work it into difficult, decent areas. I still feel there's a bit of, in both boxes, they lack a little bit of conviction, defending side, like you say, picking up, doing a good job, seeing things off. De Sorsi getting closer, appreciating this is a Premier League. You can't sit a yard or two off a forward in the Premier League, 18 yards from goal, mate, because he's going to end up in the back of your net. But at the other end of the pitch, I thought they created one or two things, got to some good areas, some of those hot spots in the last third, but never really had the bodies or the runs or the conviction of their passing to get goals. So I think it's bright. I thought today it was a day where know-how, understanding and
basics,
good instruction from West Ham, outdid a young team that are going to be inconsistent, Rob, and they're going to be trying in these days where form's going to go a bit up and down, and Pochettino's going to have to manage that and know when to bring players out and give players a run. I thought one player, Robbie, who I was particularly impressed with today from Chelsea's point of view was Raheem Sterling. He really looked like he had a bit between his teeth. He wanted to get on the ball. He was nice and lively. Gave Emerson some problems. Linked up nicely with Jackson. Who's another Rob? I thought some nice moments from Jackson. Again, he's a little unlucky when he's run through, and he was just offside when it would have been a penalty. If he can, he's got to get himself, his goals and get on the run. But I like what he's doing. I think he's another one. But again, it's keeping these guys confident and knowing the levels and consistent, which is going to be the challenge for Pochettino and Chelsea right now. But I thought there was some good moments that he can take away from. But in the end, you've got to have a bit of nous, a bit of Premier League know-how to get through difficult moments. And right as where we are, Chelsea, we're a little bit short on that, I thought, today.
I mean, Chelsea have spent so much money on central midfield players that area is, they're good. Like, that's done. That central midfield, the midfield generals in there, there's three of them, Vlahovic now as well, and others, by the way. That's good. You made an interesting point, Rob, where they lack numbers going forward. I think that could be an issue. Now, we know that Chilwell and Reece James, I thought Gusto was good, by the way. I think he's a good acquisition.
Yeah,
they
player,
got him in January from Lyon.
He's
20 years of age, good wing-back as well. But when you think of lacking numbers going forward, Rob, I immediately think about the system and how they're playing. And the three/five, at times it's five at the back. I think, ultimately, Pochettino will want to play with a back four. That leads another attacking player to add a little bit, because you said it earlier, defensively, mistakes and shaky. And also in the attacking third, Rob, with an extra man, they don't look like creating much. I mean, Sterling was bright.
No.
Carney Chukwuemeka, I pointed him out on our broadcast today, Robbie. He got caught out for the first goal, the set-piece goal. It's his zone where Aguirre scored.
Yeah.
Then he does a brilliant bit of play where he scores himself. And then, sadly for him, he went off, looked like something nasty.
Yeah,
is it a knee or bang? We don't know what it is right now.
Yeah.
I just think he's a, you know, that he looks really good to me.
It was a shame,
He looks really good.
Yeah, it was a shame. It's a real shame. And Poch has played him a lot as well, Rob. Poch looks like he likes him. He wants to, you know, nurse him through.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a few of these players, isn't it? He's going to have to nurse them through, you know, difficult times, disappointing results, picking themselves up, going again. That's what the Premier League is, mate.
Yeah, so I think this... I just think we're going to talk Chelsea, Rob, and I think 1 week we're going to say, a bit young, and make some mistakes, and then next week we're going to say, wow, they got some blimmin' good players here.
That's good.
And Pochettino afterwards, Rob, was a bit rambly with his answer. I think we're going to see that a little bit, because there's going to be times where, I mean, that's a bad result. A West Ham 3-1 defeat, it's a bad result. And when he came out and said that we need to, I'm not taking excuses and reasons why we can't win, we should be ready to win from day one, I'm like, blimey. That's not going to be easy with this amount of change and these young players, and some of them that we don't know how they're going to react to the level of the Premier League and the physicality of it. So, going to take time. We've seen them two games now, really impressive one time, not so much the second game. But that's the nature of building. It's a blimmin', it's a new team with a new manager. I mean, there's so much new about it.
Yeah, it's a new team. Yeah,
it's not easy. It's not easy.
I think this whole season, Rob, is about building this club. You know. Getting the right culture back, getting the winning mentality back, building relationships on the football pitch. I think this whole season is that. And where they finish up, in some respect, is secondary to getting all those things right. Yeah. Next season is when we'll start to take a real judgment of where Chelsea are and how much progression they've made under Pochettino. In the words of people who know better than us, it's a project, my friend. It's
really
a Pochettino project at the moment. Okay, mate, let's talk about a couple of the other results that caught the eye. I'm going to go straight to Wolverhampton Wanderers, who hosted Brighton. Gary O'Neill, we spoke to the touchline after a disappointing result for them at Old Trafford. Another disappointing result at home, Wolves 1, Brighton 4, let me get that right. Yeah, Brighton, 8 goals in 2 games, mate, showing... You can sell players for £150 million and they still go on and play. But I mean, it's an incredible job that this guy's done. Some stat came out, I think the Becker read out yesterday. Since De Zerbi's taken over at Brighton, only Man City and Liverpool have scored more goals than them.
Yeah.
So a team that, played good football under Graham Potter but didn't really have a cutting edge, this guy's just taken them to a whole new level. I mean, it's incredible what's been done at Brighton at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you that you can turn the attacking dial up. You can turn it up and you can throw people forward and you can improve that side of it. And he's done an amazing job there. Listen, this is way early yet. This is really, really early. If he keeps this going, I mean, they're right towards the top of the league right now. If he keeps this going, when one of your big boys, gets impatient and loses their job, he's got to be, Rob, he's got to be in the frame for any of them, of the big jobs that might come up in that top 6, 7, whatever you want to call it. Is he going to still be at Brighton at the end of the season?
Yes. Said that quite quickly. Based on being around him a little bit the summer series, he did it yesterday again, talks a lot about the backup that he has from all the senior people, Paul Barber and people like that around him. He's got a good group of players who he once enjoys working with. Yes, at some point he's going to go, mate, and whenever the time's right, and he'll pick the right one. But I think he'll still be there. And the strange one with that, Robin, it's a bit of a kind of dilemma. Why would, if Graham Potter did great things things to a certain level at Brighton that we thought were great things that have been taken on even further, but if Graham Potter was there and moved on to a Chelsea, big four, big top six team, and some suggested that the job was too big and maybe in the end he couldn't quite handle it. Why does De Zerbi... What's different about De Zerbi? Why would De Zerbi be more successful? Brighton manager, same situation, different, you know, circumstances, then going to the big six.
Yeah, well, there's always going to be a doubt when a manager goes from a certain size club to the giant club. And to be fair to Graham Potter, Rob, that job changed in the space of a few months with the amount of money that was getting spent, the amount of players coming in.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, just trying to get a head around it. I mean, every manager will think they can do it, Rob. And they're both very special coaches, but it is interesting when one goes into the same club and makes it better whilst losing Mike Trossard, Caicedo, McAllister. Yeah. I mean, it is remarkable. So I think he'll be next up for that. We'll have to wait and see. But again, Brighton, I mean, they're a joy to watch with all the goals going in. A great result for them. Just scanning around, Rob, the other ones as well. I did watch Villa today. You know, this is the Premier League, isn't it? We see them get battered at St James's Park last weekend. Yeah. They lost 5-1. They collapsed in the second half. I thought they're good in the first half, but really poor in the second half. And yet today they dismantled Everton 4-0. McGinn scoring a really nicely worked goal. Their system, their tactical advantage was clear on that one. Douglas Luiz scores a penalty. Leon Bailey scores as well. And John Duran, the young forward, comes on and scores as well. Everton, wow, like... I mean, how many things do you want to pick out here? Dominic Calvert-Lewin, back in the side, gets bang on his face. Looks like he's got maybe facial damage. You have a Jordan Pickford, the goalkeeper, Rob, that come out, doesn't get the ball and brings down the attacking player.
Penalty.
You have Alex Iwobi-Goff injured. I mean, the throw-ins, like they concede a goal from one throw-in from Aston Villa. Then they have a throw-in themselves and put, it was Ashley Young. And put Everton on the attack. Yeah, so it was an awful day at the office for Everton. Just when you think, like, I don't know, made some good signings. And maybe, you know, when Jack Harrison's fit, and maybe Dwight McNeil to add in as well. I thought, to be fair, that Arnaud Danjuma looked pretty lively when he came on, Rob. So if you're an Everton fan, I'm trying to give you some reason to be optimistic. You could have Harrison, Danjuma, Calvert-Lewin. It's a different sort of injury. You know, maybe you can get back pretty quickly. Yeah. I still feel... they've got enough there to be okay, but blimmin' heck, Everton fans, I mean, they get a few flipping body blows, don't they?
Yeah, it almost feels like new season, same old Everton, doesn't it? And you know, they can ill afford to be. I mean, we were there last day, Rob, weren't we? And we felt the nerves and we felt the football club and they managed to Decore goal was enough to keep them in the league. They can't go back to that place again.
No.
You know, this club and these fans deserve so much better. But difficult time for Everton and Sean Dyche, as you say, the right kind of personality to pull things round. But got to start doing things soon and, you know, get a few points on the board or else confidence gets knocked and, you know, everybody's looking to play you then when things don't go well. So, tough time for Everton at the moment. Got to get things going. Fulham 0, Brentford 3. Wissa and Mbeumo continue to score goals, mate, with Ivan Toney out. That was always been the big question. 20 goals from Ivan Toney, where would they get those from? But Thomas Frank spoke highly of these two guys and said there's more to them than you've seen. And maybe with Ivan Toney, you know, not being available for first half of the season, we'll see that. And maybe that's true. We're starting to see these two guys, you know, feel like they're the man, feel like the team set up for them to score goals. And at the moment, you know, things are going well for Brentford.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's got to be a little bit worrying for Fulham. I mean, it's never nice when you're at home early in the season to get a bit of a shellacking like that. We know that Alexander Mitrovic, Rob, has been confirmed, I think today, he's going to the Saudi Pro League. Another, you know, top player-ish from Premier League has been poached and has been attracted abroad to Saudi Arabian Pro League. So that's not going to help him. And Marcus Silva was a little bit scathing, or like, you know, he's wanted to get away. He desperately wanted to leave. It's not ideal when that happens. Not good for Fulham. But Brentford, they've again, a little bit like Brighton. We know we've talked so much about those two clubs that do a great job on recruiting. And, you know, I didn't get a close look at this game. That's in the window and all the games going on at the same time. But Brentford, I think, are playing Wissa and Mbeumo as a two up there together as a pair, which is smart, where it's Toney, it's sometimes a two, but it's more often, you know, three across the top part of the field. Right. So I like the way they're playing as a two. Yeah. So, well done. What's the other one we got here?
Finally, Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, Forest and Sheffield United.
Not Forest, wasn't it? Yeah. Forest 2, Sheffield United 1. Goal threat, Tyrell Awoniyi's come good for Forest, you know, end of last season, kicked into this season in good form again, 2-2 for him against Sheffield United team. well set up, but, you know, have got their limitations. It's going to be, I think it's going to be a struggle for Paul Heckenbottom and his team. But Forest, important win at home. Home form was so good for them last season. And Chris Wood, Awoniyi with Brennan Johnson, Gibbs White and Elanga. You tend to think there's enough up there, Rob, to, you know, if they can keep things tight at the back, there's enough for them to get over the second season syndrome and survive again.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've talked about it between the goals of Chris Wood and Awoniyi. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a great example. Both centre-forwards get a goal, good headers. Creativity of Gibbs White and Johnson. The pace now of Anthony Elanga is a good addition as well. And I didn't think they played... it was funny, I listened to the local sports radio afterwards and still the Nottingham Forest fans they're a little bit out on Steve Cooper. Like, they, you know, there was periods where they didn't play particularly well. Yeah, really? Sheffield United looked strong. Yeah, there was a few that were saying, you know, to get to the next level, we might have to change a manager. So, you know, that's where we're at right now. But I'm with you. I like what he's done, and there's no reason with this squad. They've made some signings again in this winter. Not as many, of course, as last year, but they can be absolutely okay. One bright spark with the Sheffield United, I thought, was Gustavo Hamer. It's Gustavo Hamer. Yeah, they got him from Coventry City. Scored goals for Coventry last year. Attacking midfield, scored a lovely goal. Mm. Yeah, because they are going to struggle to score goals, Sheffield United. They've got young forwards up there. You know, the likes of Ollie McBurney to come back and Rian Brewster, but they've been there before, and I'm not sure they're going to be the absolute answer. So I know Paul Heckenbottom.
Yeah, not guaranteed, are they?
Yeah, I know he's looking for players at the front to create and score, because they had plenty of that last year. They got stripped away in the summer when players were either went back to their parent clubs, or they sold really important players. Of course, Ndiaye went to Marseille for $20 million, Rob, which is their top goal scorer for last year. Yeah. So I think we're agreed on that. It could be a long, difficult season for Sheffield United.
Hmm. And just finally, mate, just a little bit of commiserations to the Lionesses. They lost 1-0 to Spain in the Women's World Cup final over in Australia. What a great run they've had, and doing so much good work for women's football in England and young girls playing. So a little disappointing, obviously, not to win, but still great work being done by that group. So commiserations to them. Okay, mate, let's wrap it up here. That's it for match week two of a new season. At the top, normal service resumed for Man City, 2 wins out of 2, but it's Brighton who sit top of the pile, 6 points and 8 goals for them. And at the other end, well, Everton and Wolves, they still got work to do, maybe a little bit more work in the transfer window before the window shuts. We'll be back next weekend, Sunday, August the 27th, when Newcastle face Liverpool at St James's Park. So a big game, one not to miss. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.